Now it's time to get back to the second hour of KSCO Presents, the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO Presents, the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. In this hour, we're going to talk to Paul Gotell about his new book, The Big U, A Guide to Your Own Revolution. Is that the...
Self-revolution.
Self-revolution.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, I put it this way. You know, people ask me, they say, what is self-revolution? And I said, well, when you find yourself revolting...
against yourself or what?
Then come see me. So, revolting, you know, I'm glad you got the humor in that. Yes, it's a very ironic, you know, English humor, right? But essentially, it's quite poignant in the sense that there's two dynamics to it. So when you to find yourself revolting is when you are at discord, dis-ease with yourself. So if on any level, physically, whatever, you are at dis-ease, then that yourself is literally revolting within itself. In a sort of more personality context, you look in the mirror and you might be the most famous, successful, spiritual, whatever box you wanted to tick to assume that you made yourself something of yourself, and you look in that mirror and all those around you celebrate you and everything, and you look in that mirror and somehow it hasn't quite landed. That ease, that peace, whatever it was that you thought all these exterior things were going to give you.
Success in life.
Success, you, fame, money, these things.
In your life, you made a fortune in your 20s, right? You were involved with the record remix movements?
I was lucky enough to find myself revolting at about 33 was when I, I kind of came
out. You had everything that society had to offer.
Yeah, I actually was on the front cover of Music Week magazine, which is a kind of like Billboard in UK. And the game was up.
Did you make a lot of money really fast at a young age? Was it?
I don't know. It's not sort of .com money, and
it's a record world, right?
Yeah, it was a record world money, right? Yeah. But it's definitely, you know, it was a surprise because it wasn't really the agenda. It wasn't my agenda, and quite often I do believe that health is holistic on every level, whether it be financial, well-being, etc. So I literally gave up a proper job to follow my passion of music. And it was quite the surprise after going through various incarnations of being stripped away to arrive at a place where the abundant flow of resources was available. But it really wasn't my direction or it wasn't my compass.
It wasn't satisfying in and of itself.
You weren't trying to master the finances as much as you were following the dream.
Yes, it was the expression, but ultimately what I realized is that any attachment to a consequence, in other words, sort of like, this is what I want to get from this, the percentage that you're involved in that means the percentage that you can't creatively express from, say, the most authentic version. So whether it be art or whether it be music or whatever it is, it kind of gets a little polluted.
So are you saying when you have an agenda, then you stop being true to yourself?
That could be a certain way of putting it, yes. I would go so far to say is that the reason the idea of self-revolution is not a singular thing. It's not that you go in, I say to people, it's kind of like, this might not be that popular, but it's kind of like, you know, a certain country going into a third world country and the third world country going, we've got some problems with the guerrillas, and the certain country going, well, we'll come in and we'll see. And then they give the guerrillas some weapons and then the guerrillas take down the government. So people come to see me and they go, I've got a really good life, but I've got this little problem. And then I go, well, actually, you know, that little problem is actually a communication, and I armed that communication, and people don't normally survive the process of self-revolution. The point
this
is...
This must be a tough sell.
Huh?
Yeah, well...
Well, yes, exactly.
Are you too successful? What? Let me show you how to take yourself down a few notches.
Dies your ego?
Well, the point is that actually an ego is like a computer. It's like if you took a picture of any computer and you said, what are all the applications and programs and routines that we've got on that computer, and collectively put it all together and just call it an ego. So you put all of those in there. Mm-hmm. And you did it yourself. And most of them, especially in your startup folder, right? So when you wake up every morning, you boot up your personality. And you have this little apprehension until it boots up into something that you're like, okay, now stop spinning and off we go.
Yeah, after your tea or coffee.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the point is, the reason is that we're in stress is that a lot of our subroutines are fighting each other. It's like an old app that you put in into yourself when you were a child that you wanted to, you made a conclusion about something. It's still running now that you're own, a 42-year-old adult, right? And so you're at odds with yourself. So really the context of a self-revolution is a continuing self-revolution. You literally wake up every day and you say, if any of this is useful to today, that's fine. But if it's not useful to today, then it can be left. So you stop being an identity and you become a fluidity. In other words, anything that you identify becomes something that becomes a restriction. And it might serve you today, tomorrow, but maybe in 5 years, it's not going to serve you. And we all know this. Anyone who's lived knows that in 2-3 years, they're not the same person.
Yes, yes. As Bucky Fuller said, I seem to be a verb.
Exactly, exactly. We're not something processing. We are the process itself. So it's like, but we have a context of observation. So we can observably realize when we are in stress, when we're insistence or resistance. And the idea is that it takes a lot of our energy to stay in insistence or resistance. We're fighting something. So if we use that as a guiding force, oh, this thing that I've defined myself is now needs to fight against something that's asking it to change, as opposed to, oh, I'll let that go and then see what arises in the space that that gave. And the thing is, we're always upgrading. We know we're always upgrading as a humanity, etc. And the only grieving, like the fighting, is when we're trying to hold on to something that is actually holding us back.
Mm-hmm. So the very thing we think we want is actually keeping us prisoner.
Yes, evolution needs entropy.
Yeah, it's a...
You know, like the human body, we were talking earlier about viruses and these kind of things, but the human body basically is its own universal system of trillions of different beings.
Right, and we're the head of it in a way.
We're right? The conscious godhead, so to speak.
You're saying we have a trillion human cells and at least 100 trillion microbials that make us up. Does that mean our consciousness is part microbial then, if it's...
It means, do we want to extend? Everything is about actually the idea. The book is called The Big You. So there's the big you and the small you. And the small you, we all know in life about saying you're thinking small or you're acting big. So this is the choice that we make every day. And to act big, you have to let go of the small thought that you identified as prior to that.
That's who you thought you are.
Who you thought you are. So you can be who you are now. And now.
So how many yous are there then?
Ultimately, there's one. There's a unification.
Do you know that her family name from Ireland was Me? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah. The Me's meet the yous.
Yes.
Isn't that lovely?
We'll be back
after this, Dr. Peter Schiff. Wasting my time in the waiting line.
Welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show with Paul Gotell on as our special guest today.
Hey, everyone.
Welcome back. And we're talking about Paul's new book.
Yes. It's interesting, actually, because during the break, there was rein it in. And it's interesting because being English and ironic and having all these sort of, quite often I was told to rein it in. So that's an interesting segue.
What does that mean to you, to rein it
well,
in?
Well, it's actually this, you know, I was told to bring it to the listeners. And so yeah. I'll just rein it right in to bring it to the listeners, which is exactly what I always work with what is here now. So in other words, if I don't bring something, then I'm much more available to what's going on. on. So right here, right now, there's this context of rein it in, which is this context of too much. And all of us know this context as children. Whatever, we came in with something and we were told it's too much.
Well,
it's
too much. That's how you learn your boundaries.
Right. So we have this, and then we adopt boundaries. Yeah. But then the thing about adopting boundaries is that we then contain ourselves.
Yeah.
And then in that containment, evolution is stunted. So now...
it's who you become.
The biggest...
your boundaries.
Yeah, the biggest ideology now is people going around going, I'm not enough, I'm not enough. And what can I do? And then the next dynamic is... oh, you are enough. But actually, my thinking has come around to this, and this is going back to, you know, we're talking about the coronavirus and we're talking about these collective systems,
right.
Is that if humanity is a collective system, if we as an individual are a collective system, we were talking about all the different things that make up a human form, then inherent in that system, there should be a very simple way that we are to understand that. And so to me...
it should not be impossible to understand.
Exactly. Yeah. And so in that sense, the reason we think we're not enough, and therefore we go out to do things, get money, get success, sit in traffic, to drive somewhere because you're going to get paid or et cetera, is because we're trying to rewrite this idea that we are enough. But what if we're more than enough? What if the only way we actually work is in unity, is in harmony, is by the fact that we actually have too much and we're supposed to share it?
Mm.
In other words, the only time that we find ourselves being at ease is when we're stopping to holding the tap back and we actually allow whatever version, everyone listening to this, everyone sitting in your car or whatever, you know, when you were a kid, there was something about you that was just like bright and sparky and wow. And then, and if you've got children, you see that in your children. And then someone, some teacher, some parents, I said, too much.
Rein it in, will you?
And then you adopt it. And I call it the dimmer switch. We all put on a dimmer switch and then we learn how to use a dimmer switch. And then we wonder why we don't feel enough. Because we've got a limiter. Like every electric capacity. And then we lose the context of our capacity. Our capacity, every one of us has a greater capacity than we can imagine.
What comes to mind is Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land.
Absolutely.
Right? Now, there was a human raised by Martians. And he had different limitations, or maybe non-limitations, when it came to creating his life on Earth.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think the other thing is that what's really interesting is in the current news, if you read any of the psych journals and everything, the biggest issue at the moment is loneliness. It's kind of like we're talking about pandemics of like the coronavirus, but the biggest pandemic psychologically is this context that we are more connected than ever. We are faster connected. We were talking about communicating from Mars and having a joke about that. But essentially, we actually feel more alone than ever. It's like I got to thinking, well, why? How is that possible? Well, if you are pretending to be somebody and somebody else is pretending to be somebody, and these two somebodies are having a good old connection, but actually it isn't the authentic version of you, then no matter how connected, no matter how successful that version is,
it's not going to be fully satisfied.
It's not going to land.
Yeah.
Talking about landing, right? And ultimately, SpaceX isn't going to be successful unless we can actually land something. So what I realized is that actually, because we don't think we're enough and we're trying to get enough to say we are enough, we've got it the back way. It's actually when you say, oh, I'm too much, who can I share with? Imagine everyone going around, what can I give to you? What can I give to you?
Yeah, that's a Burning Man credo.
Right.
Or a potlatch.
And if you've been lucky enough
Bobby's
to...
on the line, by the way, folks.
Bobby, you know about this.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful the way you explained this. It's like, it's kind of like these mini midlife crises that are constantly going on and like reinventing yourself.
Exactly.
And when you actually allow when you learn from this, and I just love trying to share what I've learned because I'm blowing up with all this information. I got to share this.
Otherwise, you have to retain it, right? And that's the stress. The stress is actually holding yourself back.
Yeah, now he's here. Yeah. He's on the air, so it's relaxed. You can let it out. Now share it, and you'll feel better.
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah, it works that way.
We're actually designed.
Thank you, Paul.
You're very welcome. Yeah. We're designed. I mean, I actually believe that this sounds like a little simple thing, but I'm actually working on a TED Talk myself about this place because yeah. I hear this, I'm enough. And I'm like, no, that doesn't work. That works in the context of separation. This individual is enough. But in the context of humanity, in the context of unity, in the context of, even if you, whether you believe in a religious context of we're all one, or whether you just think we are the human race and there's a unity in that, if you are only enough, then there's no abundance. But as you said, when you share what you have learned, whoever you are, I see my little girl at the skate park sharing with another little girl. She feels great. When you share that thing, that is when you actually lose all. It's like there's no attachment. There's no gaining. It's actually, how can I share this? And the bonus of this is that when you empty out what you have, then you make space for a higher frequency to fill you.
To share. Once you share it, you're open to new input.
And now, that's the idea.
Don't you think you're hardwired for this? Isn't that?
I totally believe we're hardwired for it.
Yeah. That's more the normal state as it could
yeah.
be.
Yeah. I mean, then the question comes is, why did we believe in the limitation? Why did we take on the dimmer switch?
Must
why
have
did
been
we
useful take for it? Some reason.
Well, it is, because you can't know your magnificence, so to speak. You can't know your own little flavor of thing you're sharing when you don't actually have any kind of a relativity to it. So it's actually as you remove everything that you thought you needed, you get to actually realize that the quality that you came in with was better than anything you could have added to yourself.
Okay, so it was perfect all along.
Yes. In a certain context, but obviously all
parts. And it can always be better.
Internal betterment is only possible in the context of sharing. That's the point. I believe all systems, and when we look at bacteria or viruses or all living systems, it's when they actually harmonize and work together and share that the whole thing rises.
Anything real happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So the old question, how can it get any better than this? Is something that can take you even further, or it can lift you. How can it get any better than this?
Well, are you talking philosophically, physiology, when you were saying better than what's the this you're talking about in that sense?
Well, that's why we have elections today, isn't it? How can it get better? Can I kick the bums out and get some new people in?
Well, the context is you're going to share, then Al responded to that, well, then you have to also appreciate the perfection, right? Because the perfection doesn't need to change a thing, right? It can already appreciate everything just the way it is without any effort.
Okay.
But since you are making an effort, then there's a context for that. And that effort is, on some level, you're here to manifest the shift towards something else. And that shift, you can use that judgment word better.
The shift. Institute of Noetic Sciences uses it.
I think there's a really simple little metaphor. And since there's a lot of people, you know, drive time sitting in their cars, I'll use that. So the metaphor is that if you're driving along somewhere and you, before Google Maps and everything, let's say, and those who have that era before sat-nav, you would stop and you'd say, am I going the right way? And what's the question that would have to be asked?
Right. Where am I?
Well, no, before that, for the person. So you'd actually...
That's not the question.
The other person would have to say, you know, if you stopped and said, am I going the right way? You'd have to say, well, where do you want to go?
Ah, right.
Right? And if the person then said, well, I want to go to San Francisco. And you're like, well, you're halfway to Seattle, actually. So you're going the wrong way. And then that person goes, well, hang on, what's in Seattle? And you're like, well, some pretty good coffee. It's like, well, I like coffee. I think I want to go to Seattle. Now the person's going to go, oh, you're going the right way now.
But there's a lot of coffee between here and there.
So the point is that right and wrong are subjective to the intention of
That's
the
true.
Direction it's that you are choosing. So it's like, where do I want to get to? And you're realizing, and this is where I'm talking about, when you create an identity, when you create a goal that is attached, you now don't allow for it to evolve. Mm-hmm. So you might halfway along a particular goal, that goal might have just been there to take you somewhere where you meet someone that's going to change your direction.
Mm.
And therefore, you have to notice, oh, I'm continuing on this goal because I set that intention, but now I'm feeling resistance. maybe, oh, here's a place where there's no resistance. Mm. And so the perfection is more the understanding is that you are the one who's defining and upgrading where you want to go. And you can change your mind on that. Mm-hmm. But we all keep ourselves imprisoned in the identity of once you've made a decision, you have to see it through, et cetera, et cetera. And it cramps us from the context of evolution.
This is a great segue to the idea of sensitivity, feedback, course correction based on getting outside of your agenda. But we're going to go to a break right now, and then we can think about stuff like that when we get back with Paul Gattell on the Dr. Future Show.
Are you a member of the Church of the Eternal Upgrade, by any chance? Welcome back to the show, folks. We're talking to Paul Gattell on his new book that just came out, The Big U, A Guide to Self-Revolution. And we just had Norma Jean drop off some books for us in the studio here. Thank you, Norma.
Yeah, you remember Norma Jean? She was our call screener a few years back.
And she's given me a book that I hadn't read, actually. Isaac Asimov's Foundation's Edge.
Oh,
which
man.
Was the fourth novel in the Foundation series.
These are gifts from John.
Yeah,
huh?
The second novel was where the mule came in and changed everything, and we were no longer able to predict the future.
We were just talking about that today.
Yeah, we were.
What a cool synchronicity.
Yeah, so thank you, Norma Jean. And some vitamins, it looks like. Memory. Memory. Oh, that's hers. Okay.
That's for Norma Jean. You
just
bought memory vitamins.
Or the Dave's case.
Okay. Just having a drug delivery happen here. Don't mind us.
Well, this is the longevity station here. You know, we do pass around a lot of mind virus drugs.
Smart drugs.
Smart drugs, right.
So thank you, Norma Jean. Appreciate it.
Sweet.
Paul, we were talking about, I was looking at the book, you break down the Big U into chapters that are kind of interesting. One I think we've been talking about quite a bit was that who was the Big U, right? And let's see.
I'm watching Alan scrolling through the book trying to find the chapters.
Okay, because there was one.
It's a Kindle edition.
Okay,
you don't just flip through the pages here.
We were talking about who was the Big U, and I think we've been getting into that quite a bit in the last little while. Then you hit what is love as the next chapter. Now, once you expand yourself to including the Big U, the universe, basically, what's love at that point? Is love a fundamental force of the universe in your estimation?
Yeah, in that context, it's kind of like, in the context of what we're talking about, it's kind of like it's the glue, it's the attracting force. The interesting thing about the force of attraction is that it pulls like to like. And so from a point of view of frequency, we were talking about frequency earlier, and we were talking about the frequency and how the viruses unify.
Right.
And so when I talked about the Big U in the context of, say, God, it's a unification. The love is the force that attracts the like to like. But what happens then is the force that is trying to pull away from the unification, in other words, the force of, let's say, separation or the force of limitation, mm-hmm. the force that makes us all want to be our own person, right? I'm my own person, I've got my own car, and I'm sitting in my own spot.
Competition, rivalry.
And my own spot in the traffic, and we're all going to try and get somewhere, right? So there's this dynamic, there's these two forces pulling, and that's needed, right? But the thing is, love is actually we would get into a sort of an esoteric context, but it's the recognition. When you go to Asia, everyone probably knows, you know, if you've traveled in Asia or whatever, and you've heard of this modern spiritual word, which is actually an ancient word, namaste, which is like the God in me witnesses the God in you, or the spirit in me, or the source in me, or the creator in me, or what. It's the recognition of sameness, you know, and it's the dynamic where certain societies will say, look me in the eye. FBI, and we all have this dynamic, and if you were to get to cops or CIA or whatever, and they'd say, oh, well, if people avert their eyes, they don't want you to see. So there's a certain context of seeing.
You kind of
truth.
Give yourself away when you're
exactly,
looking at
the authenticity of somebody. Yeah. And the thing is, the ultimate authenticity of somebody is the recognition of you in them. The recognition of what you're seeing somewhere in there is reflecting you. So the eyes are actually kind of like glassy. They're like a mirror. If you look in the right light, you'll see yourself in somebody's eyes, yeah. quite literally, right?
So what, have you ever been in a situation where you can tell that somebody's about to pull a scam on you or something, and they're trying to hide that?
Oh, this is really interesting. Okay, so there's two sorts of logic, right? There's OS2. Yeah. I have these... dynamic. How can I make this really quick to answer the question? But basically, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I'm going to presume your audience kind of know a little bit about that. It's like Maslow basically said, you know, you need food, shelter, these kind of things.
Basic survival.
Basic survival.
Covered.
And then OS2, which Malcolm Gladwell talked about, was like the carrot and the stick. It's like you do something because you're going to get rewarded for it. You don't do something because you're going to get punished for it, right? So there's this dynamic, right? And that's how most of us live.
We pain and pleasure.
But we work on this basis of, and this is where time comes in. We'll invest our time or our money or whatever to get something in the future. And then OS3 is intrinsic motivation, which is that you do something for the fulfillment of doing it.
Self-actualization.
Right? In other words, there's no getting. The getting is in the giving.
Intrinsic appreciation. You're doing what you love to do, basically.
Yes, exactly. So anyone who's ever sung, anyone who's ever done a sport where they get into the zone, anyone who's ever, like, sometimes where you're working in nature.
Yeah, that's the whole do your passion thing. That's because that's where the fulfillment
time
is.
Time disappears.
Meaning of life.
All these things cease.
Yeah.
You're not in insistence. You're not in resistance. You're actually in a complete flow state, as they call it. And that's a very common state that, you know, people have heard a lot. So ultimately, if what you are does not need anything to be added to it, then anything that could be scammed from you by its essence can't have been you. So actually, anything that is removed from you is actually, it's like removing some oil from a glass of water. And then if you don't try and get something outside, but you just allow that space to be filled up, then your glass slowly gets more and more, let's say, cleaner, and the oil spills over. Hmm. So whenever anybody, I mean, a lot of people listening might go, oh, this sounds like some like spiritual woo-woo or whatever, but just so you know that there is some real world context to this. You know, I actually had both a partner who defrauded me of $160,000 and left me with a bill to the tax man, you know, and and then I had one day I had $4 million, the next day I had $28,000, just like that. So there are these dynamics, these understandings that I have are not from some, I read it in a book somewhere and it sounded good.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that what I realized is that we all try and do this thing where we build a receptacle and we say, well, we want to fill it and then we want to protect it. Now we've got to protect this thing. But actually, we are a conduit, and anything that we let go of, we actually leave space for the, let's say, the more authentic frequency of who we were. You can't lose what you are. You can only lose what you're not. And so ultimately, and I too get that this is tough, but if you are fortunate enough to actually have had one of those situations happen to you in the past and you've arrived at a place of peace, part of that journey is to see that actually who you are now wouldn't be possible without the removal of that relationship, that job, that wealth, or whatever it was holding you back.
Have you been found that in reality, though?
Yeah.
Have you actually made friends with the guy who, or the people that ripped you off?
Yeah,
I mean, actually talk to them.
Funnily enough, that first scenario, right? Because of that, I then went and took the company. It was my partner. So after a 2-year court case and all the advice against it, I sat in a room and we all sat in a room and I just got this download. Suddenly, I just thought, I can't do this anymore. I've spent 2 years not creating, but trying to get revenge, trying to get justice. We think this is a really good thing to get. But it was a very draining experience for me. I was like, this doesn't feel good.
Didn't feel like justice.
It's just like, I'm going to get justice. Yeah. Everyone knew he'd done it. There was no hiding it. And I just turned around and I said, you know what? How much are the shares worth now? And the lawyers and that, what are you talking about? I said, well, how much? I said, okay. Took my checkbook. I said, here you go. And he obviously thought he'd won the lottery because he walked away with the $160,000 and an extra $18,000 to walk away. And I took on the debt. A whole series of circumstances happened. This is within the music industry that I had no idea. I was like, well, either the company's going to collapse. We'll see what happens. But I just can't continue in this trying to get revenge. I am going to put all my energy that was bottled up into expanding the company. And then a whole bunch of scenarios happened where the dance music scene exploded. Mm. And I got to see, not to go into too long a story, but essentially there was this track that had been released. It hadn't been a big hit, but I knew it was had huge potential. And I called the company and I said, let me promote it. And they said, well, it's already released. And I said, well, let me give it a shot. I see it being huge. And it flew into the charts at number two on its second release, wow. Which at the time, this is in the 80s, so this is very late 80s. The point was that you had to have a lot of money to get into the charts. You had to videos and touring, and this dance record just flew in the charts. And it changed the face. I mean, we are still living in this where suddenly the acceleration of everyone being able to make the music and the creativity and the fact you didn't have to do things the old way. And it expanded, my company expanded. And within a year, the company, which was only making 20,000 with this energy of this partner that was scamming me, suddenly he was gone. The company accelerated and the company paid off the debt within a year. And within two, we were making like four times what we'd been making with a partner. So there was a freedom, right? This is what I'm saying. So this is in a very real world financial business sense. But I'm saying this happens. If somebody wants to leave you, why would an employee or a partner, even someone you're married to, if both are not thriving, why would you hold them to something rather than allow space for something for you and them to change? Everything is relationship.
Including
you're never not relating.
Yeah.
Right? You're relating with everything.
So exes would all be friends then?
Yeah. The person that took something from you allowed space for the evolution of the new you.
Mm.
If you don't stay in that, the injury of that, then you basically keep that space shut, that door shut. And say the fear wisdom would be, oh, that guy scammed me. Mm. A guy came to my door, he sold me something, it broke. I'm never buying something from somebody from the door.
Yeah, it blocks you from that person.
Right? Rather than the other side is, wow, what fear did I have that I carried into that scenario? Mm. Can I actually take that and drop that fear? And then you lean into it. You lean into it. And you realize that everything that gets removed frees you to expand.
Hmm. Deep thoughts.
I did it again, didn't I?
It's okay.
Let's
You're
make
on.
Some jokes.
You're on. The big you. We're talking about the big you anyway. A Guide to Self-Revolution. This is Paul Gattell. Thanks for listening. I like that, Paul. Sharing of our too muchness.
Exactly. The only way you relieve all stress is to release your holding on to what you think was, by sharing what you think is something that you have to hold back, you see its value as it lands. You're not attached to it landing, but you'd be amazed at the thing you judge yourself the most for, the thing you have to keep your lid on, and we all know about, it doesn't matter who's listening to this, where you are, we all know the thing that we struggle every day to keep in check. Yeah. You find a hobby, you find a job, you find a new vocation, where that thing, like, obviously, I can talk, right?
This is
something I can do. It's something I hear. But the bonus is, so if I don't go out and share, it's funny, my name is Go Tell, right? Okay, so it was kind of like, kind of in the thing. If I don't do that, what happens is I have to keep it in check, and then I get in conversations.
Yeah, it gets stuck.
And then people go, wow. You.
People say tell all, tell all for me. So
Exactly. Yeah. They like, oh, you talk a lot, don't you?
Yeah.
But if I go out on radio shows, if I stand on stages, if I write books, if I'm constantly, then in my social circles, I can just be, hey, fine. I can be quiet. It's okay. I can talk or not talk because I'm having an outflow. And that outflow can be, in modern days, it can be a blog or you can just record on your phone and send it out to the world. You're allowing the expression. And that's the context. You're allowing the expression without the attachment to where it lands. You give the seeds out and everyone decides whether they nurture them, whether they water them, whether they're useful, whether they're not useful. And I don't want to get too, let's say, religious, but in that context, that there were some pretty good parables that Jesus talked about. And, you know, the whole thing of throwing seeds, some land on this ground, some land on that ground. You're not attached to where they land. You simply allow them to be spread. And you trust that.
Yeah. Yeah, trust in what actually happens.
Yeah, the usefulness of them is up to the receiver of them.
Yeah. Now, you talk about, in chapter 16, the great illusions. Now, to which are you referring? The illusions of what we think is real?
Yeah. In the chapter, you know, I go through the steps of the great illusions that make up this construct. We were talking about limitation earlier.
Yeah.
And we were talking that no existence, nothing could exist without the context of limitation. Because, you know, esoterically, all the great religions and philosophies and even science now with quantums talks about the idea of the theory of everything.
Yeah.
Whether you call it theory of everything or you call it God or you call it source, you call it, is that the unity ideology. So how is it that we could even conceive of separation? So it's only within the illusion of limitation that we can conceive of separation. But in that place, suddenly we can explore everything from a certain, and it's simply just a viewpoint. So I've got a simple metaphor if you want me to share it.
A metaphor for understanding how this, how you can be everything and
Yeah.
Same
so way. Imagine a bright light,
yeah.
A super bright light. And imagine this bright light is source, whatever.
Yeah.
And then just put a black sheet in front of it. And then step on the other side of the black sheet. And now you can't see anything. And then you put a pinprick in that sheet. And now you can see a spark of light. And
yeah.
Then put a bunch of other pinpricks. And it looks like the night sky. It looks like many stars shining.
Yeah.
But if you went to the other side, you'd see it was the one source of light shining through all of the pinpricks.
Right, right.
Then if you took that and you wrapped it around a sphere, and you were within the sphere and you watched all the lights bisecting, hitting each other and relating, that is the context that we feel we're all individuals relating with each other, but outside of that limitation is it one light shining through.
Mm.
I don't know if that followed. It's just a simple...
It's a fun little mind game.
It's a fun little mind game. There you go.
Nice little computer graphic animation.
Right.
Exactly.
It was if someone wants
to do that, that'd be great. But really the greatest illusion...
The inside outness.
The greatest illusion is the lack of life. So we have this context, even though scientifically we know that energy cannot be destroyed. We know that, you know, it's like our scientists, we learn this at school, energy, it transmutes, it just changes form. But the end thing, it doesn't really change form, it changes frequency. It changes its relative frequency, its wavelength. It's the same energy and it's just dancing in different frequencies and different wavelengths. And so we know there's actually no lack, but we perceive there is. And the ultimate perception we have is the lack of life. And we call it death, right? So the idea is that we are this limited, this finite thing. But we are. The limitation is finite. We are born. We have an arc of a life, whether it be 10 years, 5 years, 50 years, 100 years. And then we wonderfully go back to the infinite potentiality.
Mm.
So the quantum realm sucks us back in.
Well, yeah.
And then we can form again into another finite actuality we call a human form.
What about the analogy of like the local intelligence and the cloud as being the general intelligence, so the larger universe? The cloud is what you connect into with everyone else outside of you, to connect you into the larger you, I guess, which would be everything.
Yeah.
Right, everyone, everything.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
And then you have, does that give you contact with the universe at that point when you're that level of intelligence? You have knowledge of the wisdom of the ages at your fingertips?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about this is that they used to call it the Akashic Records.
Right.
And then we talk about the internet
like becoming... some kind of cosmic Google in a
way,
right?
The internet, you know, Google's becoming the modern day Akashic Records, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a repository, and Google recently, if they haven't done it, was saying that, you know, pretty soon we'll have every single bit of information ever.
So in a sense, that's already happening.
Ever.
The entire will be species available. Knowledge at your fingertips anyway, so that's what's happening.
It's one of their programs. Is to have everything there. But
this is on a spiritual level. It's happening not just with our species data, but with everything, right? You're right.
Yeah, well, the context here is that even if everything that you could ever know like Google, and is put there and is available to you, mm-hmm. in the context, in the realm, in, let's say you're talking a circle, a pie chart, right? In the realm of everything that could ever be possible, everything that was ever known is only a tiny slice in the infinite of what could be possible. So you are always limited by where you're coming from, and you are always have the opportunity to expand beyond the possibility of the past. Mm. And people like, we have Elon Musk and certain people that are thinking, quote-unquote, outside the box. But actually, we had people like Asimov, we had people like Heinlein that were thinking outside the box. We had, so in that context. Now, are they tapping into what came before, or are they tapping into this infinite potentiality? And then the context is in the infinite potentiality, because nothing is defined, including time, then all is existing at once. It's like a radio station. We're on a radio station. You can sit in your car and you can go, wow, this English guy is getting really deep. I'm going to tune into the latest pop tune and listen to some pop star talk about his love life. And you can have that experience. But the point is, you're actually always getting the input that you are resonating in. In other words, you're always talking to yourself. There's actually no input from another. You're not tuning into a, let's say, a collective consciousness in the sense that it's separate from you. The idea is the unification is it is you.
Yeah.
And you're only ever hearing something that is relevant to exactly where you are. It's going to ask you to be evolved by that thing. Ultimately, a lot of people talk about the idea of truth and trying to be authentic and trying to be real. And that's where peace and ease is. That's what all the objectives, money, fame, and they're trying to get to this place where they're at ease with themselves, where they feel at peace, where they feel they have worth. But ultimately, truth requires risk. In other words, and to explain that, the only thing at risk is a lie, right? So the truth is the truth. Whether we believe it or not, there's an inherent context of truth. I'm not putting up a truth here to be analyzed. I'm just saying philosophically. That, thank you very much. It's the truth is not at risk. But what is risk? What do you need to defend? What do you need to protect is a lie. So in any moment, there's the safe decision. There's the risky decision. The risky decision will ask you to detach from an identification you have so that you can evolve. The lie decision, the doubt decision, the safe decision will ask you to retain that. And now you've created a, let's say, a container that will withhold your expansion. So it's a bit like a snake. So, you know, like snakes, every now and again, to grow, they have to shed their skin. So every day, how about we shed our skin of ourselves?
So where does this take us? You know, in the last few minutes of the show, we're going to really see what future do you envision for us all?
I see that essentially that when you realize the, rather than going in this sort of martyrdom of altruism, you actually realize that the most, let's say that the most self-centered, selfish thing to do is to share you. In other words, ultimately, when you get centered in yourself, you realize the thing that you were holding back, the thing you were so afraid of, is the thing that you have.
It's your gift. It's your superpower.
It's your gift. It's your superpower. It's the thing that you're supposed to. And if every, imagine living in a world where everybody's like, hey, I have this superpower. I can share it with you.
Well,
if
you put it that way.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
Hey, the whole economic system would stop being scarcity based and it would be just the crisis of overabundance, like the universe.
Well, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, we know this,
It would still
this,
be
right?
a crisis because people love a crisis.
It keeps us
well, we,
on our toes.
But how about if we're constantly in the context, we no longer, crisis is the retainment of something. It's the deconstruction of something. What if we no longer try to make a construction last longer than its apparent usefulness?
Ooh, less drama.
Perfect segue.
I like that.
We cannot make this last much longer.
Nice flow to it. Yeah, thank you, Paul, for being here in the studios with us today in Santa Cruz. I think we'll go out and enjoy the
Well, thank you, everybody who listened.
Yeah.
And thank
you. Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you for revolting with me.
Norm.
Thank you, Paul.
Norm and Jean.
The Big You, the Guide to Self-Revolution, Paul Gotell.
Yeah, and the audiobook Amazon. Is almost finished, so for all those who need that, it's coming soon.
All right.
Thank you.
This is KSEO Santa Cruz and Dr. Future Show. We'll be back next Future Tuesday at 2. In the meantime,
and have a talk with your big U's, little U's.